The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. Carrie Oles suffered through a turbulent family life that continued into adulthood until she was invited to church.
I've never felt peaceful and loved since probably 11 years old. And even before that, it was a warped way of being loved. So I just ran to the altar. I didn't know what it was about. I didn't know what was going to happen after I did it. But I was like, yes, I want that.
Welcome to Life Today. I'm Randy Robinson. Tammy Trent is with me.
Hello.
And Tammy, you know, we talk to a lot of people here who go through really awful things.
Yes.
I mean, terrible things. Yeah. And yet you look at them and you go, okay, there's joy, there's peace, there's purpose. And how do they get it? Well, we know how.
Yeah.
But we want you today to experience that. I mean, it's the word of our testimony. It's what God does in our lives.
Yeah.
And we have someone who really, by all accounts, could be shipwrecked in life.
Absolutely. And I think she felt even like that, just like a mess, kind of lost at my identity. Who am I? It's like you listen to a bunch of different people your whole life telling you who you are. You start to believe certain things and then get to a place of like, who am I? What do I do? And how do I untangle the place that I'm at? Because I don't want to be here anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yet she's here today. Encouraging you. She has a book where she tells much of her story. The book is called For Real. It's written by Carrie Oles, and she joins us. Carrie, you and I talked online a few weeks ago, and I was like, man, people need to hear from her. And so thank you for coming and sharing today.
Yeah. I absolutely love her. I listened to that interview. I saw the interview, and I fell in love with Carrie.
Stop. I love y'all. Well, I'm taking Tammy with me now, so anyway.
But, okay, so some people that haven't heard your story, I mean, it's rough, and I think it's good to recount as much as you can some of the painful parts just so people can see where God has brought you. So take us back wherever you want.
Yeah.
Well, I think my first real memories on planet Earth were of being sexually abused. That's like your first recollection of memories. And even in that, I still felt like my family was normal. Mm-hmm. Because we have a version of normal that we think, you know, is normal. When in reality, if we asked everyone, it'd be different. But I had three older brothers, and everything seemed great until I was around 11, and my brother was killed by a drunk driver on Christmas. And I can remember standing at the door, just begging him not to go to the movies with his friend, but he did, and that night, he was killed on the highway. And
that was your oldest brother?
That was my oldest brother.
How did that hit your family?
Oh, well, because we didn't have a church community, we didn't know the Lord, I think we all just started dealing with trauma in our own ways, and it just split our family in two. My middle brother became so involved with drugs and crime. To date, he's been in prison 9 times. He says prison is where he feels most comfortable. I think it's because he really wanted to be the one that died. They were all so close. My youngest brother joined a cult shortly after that. He's been absent from the family for over, I mean, he doesn't know me, my family, anything. And what that left is just a traumatized girl. And you know, when everyone around us starts to disappear and everything we know starts to disappear, so do we. And so I just became a very recluse sort of person. My family, we moved to the middle of the woods. And when I say my family, just my mom and my dad and I think they were trying to outrun their trauma as if we could do that. And before I knew it, after high school, I had this void in my life so huge from just neglect. And listen, they did the best they could, but because we were all absent of the one thing we need to handle grief, which is a personal relationship with Jesus, right? They did the best they could, but the best they could was neglectful of me. Mm. And it kind of left me believing a lie that I was unworthy to be loved. And so I went out and tried to fill that void. Yeah. And by the age of 26, I was married and divorced twice with very abusive men. But by the time I started being physically abused, I had already been sexually and mentally abused. I just felt like that was the progression of my life. Like, that's the story I was worth. And I was just, my life was spinning out of control. I was involved with drugs and bad men. And when I met my husband, who I'm married to now, he did something no other person's ever done. I met him by accident at a barbecue. Accident, I'm not really sure. But I met him at a barbecue, and he said, you know, I really would like to take you out, but you are really messed up. And I was like, that's an understatement.
Right.
And he invited me to church. Mm. And I remember thinking, what? And that was at the time in my life I really contemplated suicide a lot.
Like, wow, Carrie.
I had no one to love me, so mm-hmm. what was it worth?
Right.
And I think a lot of us, we don't rise to the story we think is possible for us. We fall to the story we think we're worth.
That is so good.
And that's where I was. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I was worth a good story.
Wow.
But my boyfriend was, or the guy that was asking me out was cute.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to go. And so I went to church with him. And that was my first experience with like a big church and a pastor. And I walked in that church and I remember thinking, oh, these people, they're going to know all about my story. I don't even know, is there like a screening process? Because if so, they're probably not going to let me in. And that day I met the lover of my soul and the love of my life, and we've been married for 25 years now.
What was it, though? Was it something the pastor said?
Yeah.
Was it something you felt?
Yes.
I mean, because you say the lover of your soul, and I know you met your husband, but
yes.
the real lover of
the
your
real
soul.
The real lover encountered. Of my soul was Jesus.
Yeah.
But the pastor started saying things like, do you want to know peace? Mm. Mm. Do you want to know love? And I remember thinking, those are two things. I just remember peace and love very, you know, intuitively, like very strongly at that moment. I just remember thinking, I've never felt peaceful and loved since probably 11 years old. And even before that, it was a warped way of being loved. So I just ran to the altar. I didn't know what it was about. I didn't know what was going to happen after I did it. But I was like, yes, I want that.
Absolutely. It sounds like that was a huge turning point in your life.
It was a huge turning point. Meeting Jesus was the best thing that ever happened to me. However, trauma still talks
That's right.
when you
That's
meet
right.
Jesus.
Right? How did you get to a place of realizing, like, I have to deal with that because it's affecting everything in my life?
Yes. Well, it was when we were married about 5 years, and I was malfunctioning. I was thinking, you know, all of a sudden now I'm this good Christian woman. I had to be just like the Proverbs 31 woman that they taught me about in Bible study. And I was like, how do I get to be that? You know, and like, yes. I'm going to go out and chop wood or knit. I'm not really sure, but I was trying to do all the perfect things yes. that I thought being a Christian was. Mm. And it just wasn't working. In fact, it was making me more angry.
Was it? Wow.
It was making me malfunction more.
You feel
it
like
was
a
making
failure?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was making me deflect onto my husband when he would do something wrong. Like, I would think, why is he doing that when I was doing it too? And so you just drag all that stuff with you. You drag your trauma with you. You give it a place to land until you want to look at it and open that box and go, you know, there's some stuff I need to look at. Mm. And that's where I was. I started going to some freedom classes and some counseling. And that's when I realized, oh, I had real stuff inside that I needed to deal with.
Yeah.
And I think in today's world, more than ever, people are dealing with mental health.
Yeah.
And I think we were so obsessed in at least the church time I have been in that we need to be these spiritual giants. But unless we couple that with emotional wellness, then all we know is a good version of some words, right? Mm. We've got to understand that emotional and mental health matter. Mm. And I think sometimes we think as a Christian, we got to curate those emotions so that we don't have any.
Well, and a lot of times I know the temptation, especially with abuse. I mean, that's awful. But the pain of the loss, the fracturing of the family, the failed marriages, there's a lot of things going on there. But as a Christian, you almost don't want to admit failure sometimes.
No.
But I think the harder thing is just confronting that pain. Because it drags up a lot that you'd rather forget.
It does.
So how do you go about it in a healthy way to confront those issues that if you don't, they're just, you're going to keep dragging them, right? They're going to keep dragging you down.
Absolutely. I think you have to learn to turn the trauma into truth. So what that means would be, I would always think to myself, well, this is where your story is the ceiling. Like you've got a nice man, but anything else, you're probably not going to be worth, right? So I had to do a lot of story work and go back to the time when I was, wounded as a child. Like I had to forgive the person that sexually abused me. I had to then, I know it sounds crazy, but I had to forgive all my family members for leaving me, either emotionally or physically. I had to recognize that there were things and decisions that I made when I was out of control so that I could now understand how to take those lies that made me out of control and learn truth about them so that I can begin to think differently about who I am to God, who I am in this current situation, and how I can think about me.
Can I ask about the forgiveness part?
Yes.
Because that... Easier said than done. Right? Especially when you're talking abuse.
Absolutely.
But also when you're talking about maybe your parents thought they did everything right don't realize, so did you go to these people or is this a thing that you did on your own? What does that look like?
Well, to the man who killed my brother that night, who drank too much and hit my brother's body while he was putting gas in his car, I had to write him a letter. And I looked him up on Google, found him, mailed him a letter and said, you have no idea who I am, but this is what I need to do. And I don't expect to hear from you, but I have to do this exercise for me. Because that forgiveness was choking the life out of Carrie. Because if my husband would do one thing wrong, it was hard for me to forgive him because I didn't know how to forgive anyone. So I wrote him a letter. My dad was still alive, and I just wrote my dad a 3-page letter front and back, and I listed out all my sins that I thought of being a terrible daughter that he probably thought. And I gave it to him. He was actually on his hospice bed at the time. And I said, listen, Dad, I always thought that you were a terrible dad. Now I understand you lost 3 sons. And I had a part to play in malfunctioning as well. At some point as an adult, I made decisions out of pain that I regret, and you've probably looked at and thought, well, now I've lost my 3 sons and my daughter is a wreck. And so I wanted you to know that I'm letting you off the hook. You are not a terrible dad.
Wow.
We just had a terrible thing happen to us, and none of us knew how to rightfully deal with trauma. And I'll never forget, I thought he would read the letter, and I thought he would, say, I told you about number 7, But instead, he folded up the letter, and he took my hand. And I knew at 36 years old, my dad never held my hand. But he took my hand, and he said, I've always loved you, daughter. And I'll never forget, it's the first time I think I felt my father's love, but I knew it came from my father's love.
I'm sorry, I gotta take a moment with that. That's incredible. I love that. I love that God gave you that gift, that moment with your dad. I was gonna ask you what response he gave you. And I wanted to say, in his response to you, has that helped you in responding and healing throughout your life?
That was, as you called it a minute ago, that was another turning point in my life. I realized that, I meet a lot of girls, and especially the line of work that I do, we always point to our dad, that he didn't give us very much good self-worth. Well, now I teach them, let's look at the part we played. Let's have a different perspective of, yeah, my dad did terrible things. He did neglect me. But it was my way of viewing it as well, because I knew in that moment, he actually did always love me. He just didn't have the tools and didn't know how to show it.
Can I talk about the power of a full circle moment?
Yes.
Because you alluded to that, talked about the girls that you ministered to. And I love how we always say this, God wastes nothing, but he doesn't, especially if we work with him.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that, a place you never wanted to go,
yes,
but God took you back?
So I grew up on Sundays going to prisons, different ones, to visit my brother. And I hated Sundays. That's why I hated church. And I'd always see it was family day. And I'd think, oh, family day. It's family day at prison. And I'd go get searched at, from the ages of, you know, 12 to 17, every prison. And so I made a vow when I became a speaker and an author, I will speak all kinds of places. I'll go to all the pretty little platforms and the women's conferences, but I will never speak in prison. And I got a call to speak in prison.
And
I said, I'm so sorry, but I don't speak in prison. And I'll never forget the lady on the other end of the phone. She had the audacity, the great conviction of the Holy Spirit. She said, really? With your story? I would have thought that's exactly where you would speak.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, we don't know each other that well. But she was so right, because I went, and the day I went to my very first prison, I drove up in the parking lot all alone, and I thought to myself, you have got to be kidding me. It was the very first prison my brother had ever been in.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
And I said, Lord, why would you do this? Mm-hmm. And he said the greatest sentence. He said, sometimes you got to go back to the place where the pain originated and get that healed to move on to your purpose.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness, Carrie.
I know you talk about this, and I know you've helped a lot of people. Can you do another program where you walk through that healing process with people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to do that.
So
you don't want to miss that. I have to ask one more question.
Yes, sir.
Well, actually, two, quickly. Did you ever hear from the gentleman, the drunk driver?
No.
Okay.
I didn't.
Okay.
And then, what did you do to confront your abuser, or did you? Or was that just a personal exercise?
You know what? That was a personal exercise within me. He had passed away at an early death.
Okay.
And so I had to just do that with a counselor.
Okay. And so I ask that because I know anyone who's in that situation is like, in those examples, not hearing anything back, having the full circle moment.
Absolutely.
And then just having to do it within yourself. It's all acceptable, yes.
It's all good. Acceptable, and it all frees up a bit of the trauma story, right?
Okay,
and turns it into a truth story.
Okay, I know some people need to hear that. So whatever you need to do to confront, it's all good, and it's all good in God's hands. If you want to talk to somebody about that right now, we actually have a telephone number. We'll put it on the screen. There's somebody who will pray with you, someone who will listen to you, and maybe start that process. So pick up the phone. We care about you and your needs. We care about anyone who's dealing with trauma. And Tammy, I know you know right now there are people around the world dealing with different levels of trauma and the outreaches of life. We're able to do some great things. We have an opportunity right now.
We have a great opportunity. Take a minute and watch this.
Christmas is just around the corner. And at Life Today, it's time for Christmas Shoes and Smiles. Along with new pairs of shoes, we're giving Christmas smiles to special children born with physical challenges through gifts of transformative, life-changing surgery. And while we celebrate each gift's laughter and joy, we honor the silent struggles that inspire them.
I gave birth to Hannah Petra. Then she started having some problems. This person told me that, do you know that your baby's head is growing? Then I reacted badly. I came back home. I was crying. I shedded my tears. Then I said, why me?
Do you know your baby's head is growing? Something no mother ever wants to hear. What Felistus would learn is that her daughter had a neurological condition called hydrocephalus, or water on the brain. You see, inside everyone's head is fluid that protects our brains. But the bodies of children with hydrocephalus cannot reabsorb and drain this fluid naturally from their heads. Worse yet, when left untreated, the results of hydrocephalus are often lethal.
I didn't know even about Shua. I wish I knew. I would have heard with her, but I didn't know anything.
The people at Felicia's church had told her that she needed to see a doctor. And when she got to cure, they were able to diagnose Ana Petua and treat her. Felicia's told me that without cure, she would be lost. And I wonder how many other mothers around the world are feeling that right now.
Cure International is Life's mission partner in Uganda, and it was their skilled surgeons who corrected Ana Petua's deadly condition. Even as you watch this, a new surgical center is under construction to expand Cure's capacity to treat children in desperate need. Its completion now depends on the same giving spirit that made Ana Petua's healing a reality.
Hard to watch at times, but wow, what an opportunity to literally save lives. And that's not the only miracle that they're going to see. We have a miracle right now because that surgical center cost $1.2 million. But a friend, a partner of life, has already given $700,000 to that. So it's up to us to cover the other half a million, and that's why we're coming to you. We're saying, what an opportunity. We're going to bless so many children with the shoes this year. We're going to bless many more with the smiles, the cleft palate surgeries, cleft lip and cleft palate. But there are many whose lives, I believe, will depend on getting that surgical center up and running. The parents there can't afford the kind of treatment they need. You know how difficult it can be to get good health coverage, even here in the West. Over there, it's impossible in many situations, except for God and except for you. So we want you to partner with us this Christmas as the best you can. Maybe you buy yourself something a little less so you can bless someone else. It will be so meaningful. And though you may not see all of the fruit of it, God knows. The one who sent his son this Christmas to be a blessing so that we could live. It's in his name that we are going to be a blessing so that others can live. And we want you to be a part of it. Tammy, I know you've been to these places.
Yeah.
You've seen the pain, you've seen the heartache, but you've seen the opportunity that's before us. It's such a beautiful opportunity.
It really is. And the thing is, we're not asking you to carry the load by yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, if we all come together, Randy, and just even do a little bit, if that's all you can do, it's a lot. You have to see that as an enormous gift that you're giving. 25,000 people came together and gave $25. Could you imagine what we could do with that and how we could knock that out? Now, there's some that can do more. Praise God for a place that you're in, a season you're in where God is blessing, where now you can bless others. I'm telling you, it will make a difference. Please hear our hearts on this. Please know that this is life-changing and life-giving. We have access to this here where we live, but they don't there. We could change it for them today. So I'm going to ask you to prayerfully consider right now if God is speaking to you. Do not hesitate. Respond right now. Let's knock this out now. Let's keep pouring the mortar. Let's put up the walls. Let's do whatever we have to do to save another life today.
That's right. And you know what? No matter what you can do, it will make a difference. Let me give you a quick rundown. $36 will provide shoes for 10 children. $180 will provide shoes for 50 children. Now, the average cost of the cleft palate and cleft lip surgery is about $500. So a gift today would go towards one of those. And we're asking for a gift of $1,000 or more. Some of you can give two, three, four, whatever God's enabled you to do. We just ask you to stop and say, Lord, what would you have me do? And then just do it. It's not for us. Mm-hmm. It's for those children who desperately need that human touch that we believe is a touch from God, that cure, the name of our partners, for those who will possibly die without our help. So go online, go to the phone, make the best gift you can.
For almost two decades, Life's Christmas Shoes and Smiles has continued to provide shoes for impoverished children throughout the world, as well as corrective surgeries for children with cleft palate disorders. By responding today, you can help provide new shoes for 150,000 children in time for the holidays, and for some children, a beautiful new smile. Your gift of $36 will help provide shoes for 10 children. $72 will help provide shoes for 20. $180 will help provide shoes for 50. And a gift of $500 will help provide a corrective smile surgery. This year, we have an incredible opportunity to help construct a new surgical center that will provide life-saving surgeries to children suffering serious neurological conditions. This $1.2 million project is up and above Life's normal budget. But because of one generous friend for Life, only $500,000 is needed. As a thank you for your gift of support to this life-saving outreach, be sure to request the blue crystal shoe ornament, a treasure to display each Christmas. With your gift of $100 or more, you may request this keepsake boxed set featuring four crystal shoe ornaments. Finally, please consider an extra gift of $1,000 or more to help construct Life's new surgical center. And with this gift, you may request this beautiful bronze sculpture, a cup of water. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
I hope you will go online, go to the phone, make the best gift you can. We are going to make this Christmas so special with your help for so many children, and obviously the ones who received that life-altering, perhaps life-saving surgery. Yeah, you are going to just bless them in such a huge way. So we're excited about that. And we're excited about Carrie coming back for another program.
Yes. Yay. So good. So much to say. I hope that we go a little bit deeper into the topic of healing, because I think a lot of people need it. Carrie, where can people find you? Find your books, find all your resources, book you for the next prison conference?
No, just teasing. They can book me or look up any of my books or product or anything at unlockedministries.com.
UnlockedMinistries.com. Okay.
That's right.
Now, you can go there, and I would, but you got to come back.
Yay.
We're going to help walk you through trauma on the next program with Carrie. Appreciate you being here. We'll see you again next time.
My pain in the present is very connected to something that was left unhealed in the past.
Carrie Oles helps you unlock healing from your past pain.
Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.